Hi, this is Michael Buffer, and welcome to the Box Hard Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Mikey Garcia.
This is the monster from the swamp, Regis Ruru Progre.
Hey, what's up? This is King Carlos Molina, former IBF world champ.
This is Michael, the bounty hunter, 2012 Olympian and your people's champ.
This is Charlie Edwards, flyweight champion of the world.
This is Fast Eddie Chambers, and you're listening to the Box Hard Podcast with my main man, Joey Cosmo.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 410 of the Box Hard Podcast. I'm your host, Joey Coastman. I'm joined, as ever, by a former heavyweight world title challenger, my main man, Mr. Fast Eddie Chambers. Eddie, how you doing this week, my man?
I'm good, my man. How about you?
Always good when speaking with you, Eddie. Yeah, it's going to be quite a short show, I reckon, this week. We don't have too much to review, and we don't really have too much to preview. Just a couple of cards, really, on the review part, and a couple of cards on the preview part. But yeah, jump in whenever you can, Eddie, because I can't imagine there's going to be too much to kind of get involved in for you this week. But whatever you want to jump in and say, jump in and say. Let's start, though, with the review part. We're going to talk about this here. It went down last Friday, August 18th, at the York Hall in Bethnal Green, London, United Kingdom. It was live on BT Sport. Let's start with the undercard. A good win for Ryan the Piranha Garner, now 14-0. A TKO in round three against Juan Antunes, who's now 12-2. It was for the WBC International Super Featherweight title. A good win there for Ryan Garner. Looked quite spiteful in getting the victory. And yeah, I think it was a bit of a statement win, really, for him. Decent little opponent in there against him, and he stopped him with ease. I thought that one, you know, could have gone the distance, to be honest with you. So good stuff there for Ryan Garner. Moving up the card once again, Nathaniel Collins, now 13-0. Boy, oh boy, did he impress in his Queensbury debut. A KO in the very first round against Raza Hamza, who's now 17-2 with a draw. It was for the British and Commonwealth featherweight titles. Yeah, I mean, like I said on last week's show, both guys in their respective last fights both boxed the same guy. And that guy was James Beach Jr. Nathaniel Collins knocked him out. Raza Hamza lost to him. So I said, you know, that might play a factor here. And yeah, I guess, I don't know if it did or not really, but yeah, Nathaniel Collins with a first round KO, he's completely blitzed Raza Hamza there. A lot of people saying maybe he was caught cold or whatever, but yeah, a brilliant statement there for Nathaniel Collins. And I think there's so many fights for him at featherweight now. If he's going to be as good as he was the other night, then yeah, that's a dangerous addition there domestically at featherweight. Not that he's only just popped up on the scene, but he's only just been signed to a major promoter, so I'm really happy for him there. He's certainly impressed. And yeah, the main event, Dennis McCann, now 14-0 with a draw, a technical draw, after 9 rounds against Iron Up Baluta, now 16-4 with a draw. I did say on last week's show, Baluta should never have been a 6 or 7 to 1 underdog to win on points. No way in the world. I said that, you know, I think Baluta's going to come on strong late on, and he's an extremely tough guy, very game, etc., etc. It was for the vacant WBO Intercontinental Super Bantamweight title, by the way. McCann was cut on the forehead from an accidental head clash. That's what ended up being the reason they stopped the fight, the reason it went to the cards. But yeah, Baluta at the point of the stoppage was coming on strong, and I forgot. I actually thought it was a 10-rounder for some reason. I think it may have been listed maybe as a 10-rounder initially, but it ended up actually being a 12-rounder. So, yeah, I think Baluta would have probably swept that fight away, because since McCann sustained the cut, Baluta seemed to just upper gear. And yeah, McCann seemed to be, I don't know if he was worried about the cut or what, but seemed to slow down a little bit, seemed to be a bit more hittable. I'm guessing his vision was all blurred and stuff like that. Credit to McCann, though, carried on, you know, carried on with the rounds. I'm not sure which round the cut happened in, but it's not like they stopped it immediately. He still came out for a few more rounds and stuff and tried to give it his all, even though he was getting kind of second best, I guess, in those areas. But yeah, McCann as well fought really good, found some fantastic uppercuts time and time again, but Bellotta just does what he does, makes it tough. And like I say, no one has an easy night against Bellotta unless your name is Liam Davies. So yeah, I don't know. Are we going to see a rematch? I'm not too sure. I'm gonna guess that McCann will be out for a while recovering from that cut. It was quite a bad one there. But yeah, all the best to him in his recovery. And yeah, draw here. So yeah, I mean, I'm not too surprised, to be honest with you, to see a draw. I know that obviously it only went 9 rounds, but these guys I felt were always really evenly matched. That's why I felt Bellotta was such a big price at 6 or 7 to 1. Almost happened though. Moving now to the Utilita Arena in Birmingham, West Midlands, United Kingdom. Over here, a couple fights to mention. Once again, Solomon Dacres. I said it on last week's show. I've said it every single time he's been boxing. This guy is really boring, and I hate to be negative, but once again, goes the distance. 10 rounds against Chris Thompson, who's now 12-5 with a draw. Solomon Dacres 7-0. You know, I knew he'd win the fight, but once again, cruises to an extremely forgettable points win. Just completely doesn't have it. I don't know what he's missing, but for a heavyweight, like I say, you need to be banging people out, especially early on. It's just not there for Dacres. He just bores the life out of me. Also on the card, Jordan Flynn, 9-0, now 9-0 with a draw, a points draw, obviously, against Cain Baker, who's now 19-10 with 2 draws. It was a rematch, like I say. The first fight went the distance and Flynn managed to get a close points win. And then here, they did it again. And this time, a lot of people, including myself, felt that Flynn actually won it more conclusively than the first fight, but somehow ended up with a draw. I think Cain Baker, if I'm not mistaken, after the fight even said he felt quite lucky to have got a draw. So yeah, didn't really like that. But yeah, Baker down in round 2 and Flynn had a point deducted in the 10th and final round, which I think was probably pivotal there. But yeah, that's a real shame. Okay, yeah, moving on. Let's go to this one here. Galao Yafai now 5-0, a TKO in the first round against Tommy Frank, who's now 15-4 with a draw. It's probably got to be the end of it, I think, for Tommy Frank. Lost twice in a row now, both by knockout. Lost in round 10 last time out to Jay Harris, this time in just a round to Galao Yafai. I did jump on it. A first round or second round knockout was 9-1. That's to cover both rounds. So yeah, knockouts, A knockout in round 1 to 2 was 9-1. I jumped on that one, and that was quite a nice return there. 10 times your money if you include your stake. That's what you got there. Yeah, Galao Yafai, like I say, I knew he was going to start fast. I said it on last week's show. He's going to want to start fast. He's going to want to try and get him out before round 10. And will Tommy Frank sort of be able to cope with Yafai? And I felt it was always going to end in knockout. It was just a matter of when. But to get him out in the first round, I think, was quite impressive. He absolutely battered him. And yeah, the corner of Frank threw the towel in. It was for the WBC International Flyweight title. I think Yafai can be move quite quickly, actually. We know, obviously, his amateur success and the rest of it. Obviously, gold medalist. But yeah, I think they can move him as quick as they want to, really. But there are a few killers at the weight as well. I don't want no one to take that out of context. But also on the card, an absolute shocker. Cyrus Patterson coming off a great win last time out against Chris Jenkins. And yeah, he is now 6-1 because he actually retired on his store at the end of round 8, didn't come out for round 9 of a scheduled 10. He was down 3 times, round 3, round 5 and round 6, both boxers cut. Conor Walker, like I say, really came to fight, man. I was shocked because he's not really known as a big puncher, but he just kept catching Pattinson and hurting him. And Pattinson's got that kind of style where if he wanted to box, he'd probably win fights a lot easier than he does. But he wants to have a fight. He wants to have a tear up. And in doing so, he gives his opponent a massive chance. And that's really what happened here. And Conor Walker, credit to him, soaked up any pressure. And yeah, just landed the shots that counted, and in the end, I mean, God, he was well ahead on points, I think, Conor Walker at the time of the stoppage. And yeah, the corner, I think, was the people that actually stopped that fight for Pattinson, because he came out saying, you know, I'd never quit and stuff like that. But yeah, that is a real spanner in the works for him, because I said on last week's show, I think he's a little bit underappreciated. He's maybe like one of Matchroom's kind of secret weapons. There's not a lot of hype around him, but he's really good, looked really good against Chris Jenkins, and then yeah, does this. I just cannot believe he loses to Conor Walker. I really didn't see that one coming. One of the biggest upsets you're going to probably see all year. And then moving to the final card to mention, it went down yesterday at the Hawarden Pavilion in Sydney, New South Wales. Just a couple of fights to mention. Luke Jackson returned to the ring, former opponent of Carl Frampton. He got in there with a guy that actually beat him in a big upset, a guy called Tyson Lantry. He beat him, I think, I'm not sure how many rounds it was scheduled for last time when they fought each other, but he lost to this guy, and I think it was like a majority decision loss or whatever. And Luke Jackson, I think, stepped away from boxing for a while, came back, and this was going to be his last fight. And yeah, good stuff for him. He managed to avenge that loss, so he's now 21-2, and he's avenged one of his two losses. The other one was, of course, to Carl Frampton. So a unanimous decision over six rounds for Luke Jackson. Tyson Lantry is now 10-5. Nikita Su moved to 7-0, a TKO there in round six against Jack Brubaker, who's now 17-5 with two draws. I knew it was going to go a few rounds, this fight, because I think Brubaker is quite tough. But I noticed that Tim Su knocked out Brubaker in round four when they fought. And I don't obviously think Nikita is as good as Tim, so I thought it's definitely going to at least go four rounds here. And it was interesting to see the over-under was set at 4.5. I thought that was really interesting there. And I can't remember if I backed that or not, but yeah, that was a good little bet there. If I did, it was only something small, because I can't even remember now. But yeah, got him out in round six, and I think a lot of people were quite impressed that he actually got him out there anyway. So yeah, nice stuff from Nikita Su, who is actually coming on quite nicely. And also Liam Wilson as well on the card, returned to winning ways after his last fight, brilliant one against Emmanuel Navarrete. He's now 12-2, a unanimous decision over 10 against the previously undefeated 12-0 Carlos Alaniz, now 12-1. That one was for the vacant WBO International Super Featherweight title. Haven't come to Eddie at all in part one. That is the end of part one. The final thing for me to do in this part is to welcome this week's special guest. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the undefeated female super middleweight world contender. It is, of course, Mrs. Shadeja Green. Shadeja, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. How are you?
I'm very well that I'm speaking with you, Shadeja. Thank you for coming on. So it's the first time we've had you on, so welcome once again. I wanted to start by asking, what got you into boxing in the very beginning, Shadeja? For those that don't know, what attracted you to the sport?
Well, I was a pretty unique basketball player. I was pretty skillful. My high school coach, Edward Black, he would always get on me about, you know, my footwork and getting in shape, and he wanted me to run track, and I refused to do that. I mean, I hated running at that time. I wanted to take up boxing, and I met a guy by the name of Barry Porter when I was in high school, and he helped me fall in love with the sport. He started teaching me things, and I was always so nervous about going to the gym, but I loved it. So at that time, I had, you know, scholarships on the table, and my mom, who, phenomenal parent, you know, just said to me, listen, you're not going to box, you're not going to, you know, do this and pursue the Olympics until you go and get your college education and your degree, and when you do that and you hand me your degree, I'll give you your life back. And went to college, enjoyed, you know, won CAA championships, went to the Sweet 16, made friends and connections, and came back and just decided that boxing was it. And it's been, climbing uphill since, you know, and I'm pressing forward, you know.
Yeah, no, I think it's fantastic to hear that backstory, and I love the way that you were so, I guess, deeply involved with another sport and decided to turn to boxing in the end. That's really interesting. I know that you won a silver at the World Games in 2016 as an amateur. Shadeja, is that the highlight moment of your amateur career?
Yes, I'd say so. I just want people to understand. I only had 5 fights when I went to the World Championships to represent the United States. Just 5. I mean, I won the Nationals. That was my 5th fight. So I would say the Nationals, of course, and my trainer, he's really good, Barry, at the time, Barry Porter, who's still in my corner, alongside with terrific guests. He was very confident that even with just 5 fights and me being a heavyweight, I could still do so well. And I had never fought. I was probably fighting maybe once a year. I had never fought in front of a crowd. I've never fought 4 or 5 times, like back-to-back. I was fighting every day because we were the lowest seed for the heavyweight. So I'd say that's pretty definitely a highlight of my amateur career.
Yeah, that's an amazing achievement, by the way. And obviously, turning pro, you've now had 13 fights. You've stopped 11 of the girls you've been in with, which is highly impressive in itself. Since the Hernandez fight, which was your 3rd fight, you went on that crazy run of knockouts. 4 of them as well, back to back to back to back, were all first round somewhere in there. I thought that Ellen Cederuz might break the streak and actually go the distance, but I was wrong. That was just 2 fights ago now. It was obviously your MVP debut, but another highly impressive performance from yourself. Just talk me through that fight, Shadeja. Obviously, Ellen is tough, but you managed to finally break her in that 6th.
Yeah, Ellen Cederuz, I respect her now, respected her then. She was 2-time unified world champion, and I knew that she was bringing a great deal of experience that I hadn't seen just yet, you know, prior in my boxing career. I mean, I faced girls with good experience that's been in there with world champions and title shots, but Ellen brought something different. She was actually bigger than me, taller than me, and she just kept coming forward. So I just stuck to my game plan. Wasn't necessarily chasing the knockout. I was just putting combinations together and also being defensively responsible in that fight as well. And I showed a different style. That knockout was off like a back foot and moving around and boxing. And it came. And, you know, I was glad. I was glad to have her as a dancing partner and glad to share the ring and just glad to be victorious in that fashion.
Yeah, like I say, it was a fantastic performance, probably my favourite one of your career. I mentioned the signing with MVP, obviously Most Valuable Promotions, Jake Paul's outfit. I wanted to ask, how did that actually come about in the first place? Obviously, it's great to see what he's doing with Amanda Serrano. It's great to see what he's doing, actually, to women's boxing in general. I love that, by the way. You know, I get a lot of women on the podcast, hence why you're on now. But it's fantastic that he's doing something that you can all shine with. But yeah, back to my question, how did that actually happen in the first place?
That actually, I have to give a lot of respect and love to Amanda Serrano and Jordan. They had been mentioning my name for some time about me being the next, you know, the next best female fighter to you know, to perform. So they were very consistent. And then, you know, when she signed, you know, we kept in contact, so to speak, a little bit through Instagram and stuff like that. So they were just word of mouth. And then MVP, I guess, started taking interest and looking into, you know, what they could do with me and watching, you know, how I carry myself in my career. And they gave me an opportunity to fight on Jake's card when he fought Anderson Silva. And they liked what they saw. And, you know, I became a part of MVP family.
That's excellent, man. And your last fight, we should also touch on, you boxed another very tough, very game opponent, Olivia Curry. On that occasion, I actually did think you'd probably get her out of there. I think at times during the fight, I think her corner could have threw the towel in, I'll say. I think the corner were very brave. But ultimately, she showed incredible toughness and determination to hear that final bell. I believe you felt you had a bit of an off night. Talk me through it, though.
You know, if you, based on, like, my mom and just, I guess I would say close-knit, like my mom and my parents, and maybe, I guess that's it. But, you know, you would think from watching it from their point of view and them being on the floor and watching it, I'm saying to myself, yeah, this is an off night. But when I go back and I watch it, there's times I could have poured on more. there's time, but I was very sharp and very, I felt like the commentary, of course, they can be a little tough on fighters, which is expected. We're in a sport where it's their job to criticize you. It's their job to paint a picture of what the fight is expected to look like and what they're seeing. I felt like I was dominant every round. Olivia Curry was just extraordinary tough girl who came to fight, and she brought some of the best out of me. You know, everything plays into a factor. No excuses as far as the, you know, the crowd and everything. And I am just so blessed and appreciative of Olivia Curry. I needed that 10 rounds. And things took a play into, too. Like, you know, people wondering, can she go 10 rounds? And does her power remain and stay the same while she's in the later rounds? And it showed. The 6th, 7th, and 8th round, I had Olivia hurt bad. I kind of wanted to prove that I can go 10 rounds and I am in shape and I'm not a fluke. I'm not a front runner who, you know, just trained for the couple of rounds to get you out. And to compare the two with Aline Sedeiros, who was a unified world champion, and then Olivia Curry, who actually has a good record as well and ranked 5 in the middleweight division. Not everybody go. And I just was very grateful and appreciative that she was able to walk out of the ring and I was able to walk out of the ring and we put on a phenomenal performance.
Yeah, I can't really disagree with what you're saying there. I think it is important to remember that obviously you hadn't even been into round 7 prior to that, and obviously you did 7, 8, 9, and 10 very comfortably. You didn't lose a round. But yeah, it's just funny. I think a lot of, you know, boxing fans, as we know, have very short memories, and women are not really supposed to knock out 11 out of 12. But when they do, it's like, oh my God, this is crazy. And then the one time you go the distance like every other woman, all of a sudden you get thrown under the bus a little bit. It's funny how it works. But yeah, since the fight, Shadeja, the internet beef, if you like, between yourself and Clarissa Shields has definitely increased. Where did that all begin?
Yeah, I like the way you put that as well. Before this Clarissa Shields thing, I like the way you put that. I mean, I did spoil my fans, but it's been inconsistently back and forth. If you know, she basically didn't like my performance. And compared it to herself, and just made a comment on about that it was low tier, and it basically started from there. But it also started prior to my fight. And I just didn't give it any energy or any time because I said to myself, I need to focus on Olivia Curry. Clarissa Shields is not the opponent in front of me. I have a plan and I have things in place and I'm going to stay professional and stay off of Twitter. But it's just basically the regular stuff with me and Shields, back and forth. I'm not going to back down from her. She makes comments and statements and she mentions me. And I'm going to keep it as respectful as she keeps it. And, we can go back and forth, and I guess it has a lot of people watching and googly eyes, and it builds up to make a great war. So I let nature take its course.
Yeah, it's been very interesting. I mean, obviously, I've had to break out a few bags of popcorn here and there when I go on Twitter and see the back and forths. There seems to be a new one every day or so. I'm paraphrasing here massively, but I remember seeing one tweet that you'd sent, Shields. And am I right in saying I think maybe she had referenced something to do with your past and you'd said that maybe you had a bit of a troubled past or something? Am I right? Am I on the right track there? And if so, can you expand on that in any way?
No, she's probably talking about where we actually, the beef truly originated from. What happened is me and Clarissa Shields were good friends. We were on the USA team together. We went to those world championships together. And I would help her with sparring a lot. We would spar and it made for a great show. We would go toe-to-toe. Anybody can attest to this. We both would have great days. And when she took her talents to the professionals, and I started, you know, I still was heavy, but I wanted to lose weight and take my talents to the professionals. What happened was, when she was fighting Christina Hammer, I had the opportunity to go over and spar and train. Well, not train alongside her, but spar Christina Hammer for a week, which was paid, which. You know, I just also wanted to test my skills to see where I stood up against another world champion myself. So that's what happened. She found out a week before the fight. I you know, thinking about it, looking back at it, I definitely was wrong for going to Christina Hammer's camp and helping her prepare for who was someone that was supposed to be my friend. And so she, you know, we haven't ever got a chance to smooth things out or talk since then. She found out off of Instagram. So that's where the beef really originated from. I went on platforms and podcasts to say that I was wrong. We had a small conversation in the DM and we were supposed to talk, but we never did. So with everybody and me being now close to her in her weight, she obviously is very still much upset, which is rightfully so. And like I said, it just makes for a great war. It makes for a great fight. And, that was years ago. I was apologetic about it then. I understand what I did. And that's just that. That's where I stand on that.
Yeah, no, it's good to get that backstory, and I didn't actually know that, so that's really interesting. I can kind of see both sides, you know what I'm saying? Obviously, you're getting paid to do some sparring. I feel like you should take that, but then at the same time, it can look bad, I guess, if it's a friend of yours. So I get it. How you keep saying it'd be a war, that fight would be a war. I wanted to ask how you think that fight plays out. I do think there's a real lack of challenges out there for Clarissa. I was really happy when, it sounds a bit crazy to say, but when Hannah Gabriels failed a test and we didn't see the rematch, I was quite happy that we didn't see that rematch because I just didn't think there was any point in the fight at all. I think she's really running out of opponents, but thankfully you're one of the very few ladies that I do want to see her in with, and I think boxing fans worldwide want to see the fight also. But how do you see it playing out?
Well, of course, I see me being victorious in dominating fashion. I think it'll be a great fight. I don't think that Clarissa Shields comes down and lays down, has never laid down for anybody. She's tough. She's a phenomenal fighter. And even though with our beats, I will always give her props and respect. She's done amazing things in the sport, amazing things, to be undisputed two times. And I just think that skill for skill, I'm the better skilled fighter. Size, I'm a bit bigger. And Clarissa is very young, which could also work in her favor. She works hard. But I just think that just the world hasn't seen a talented female fighter besides, you know, in the other, like Amanda Serrano and the Elisa Bumgarners, the Michaela Mayers, just in this weight class, 168. I don't think the world has seen someone who's capable of being a power puncher, but very skilled and very defensively responsible, even though to some sort people might say that I didn't show that in my last fight, but to compare two different fights, I've showed you two different styles. I got a knockout backing up, and I just put on a 10-round dominant performance coming forward. So that shows you that I'm well-equipped to do a lot of things. My toolbox is full. I'm sure any fighter will say that their plans are to be victorious, but I think it'll be a great fight. I think it'll be an extremely great fight, and I just see myself being victorious.
I hope we do see it. I'd love to see it, of course. And yeah, another girl that you've mentioned a lot lately, Savannah Marshall, obviously from the UK, from where I'm from. Is that the next move for sure?
There's nothing more important than Savannah Marshall. Savannah Marshall is next. Savannah Marshall is also a great fighter. She's undisputed at my weight class, and that's been a dream of mine. And I can't go any steps further before I take that step. I need that.
And Shadeja, what can you tell us about that in terms of, like, I don't know, like, how far along is that? Is there a date? Is there a location? Has there been conversation?
That's, you know, for my team to discuss. I wouldn't have any answers as to a date and location there on it. My team is doing a great job. My managers and Nikisa, Veronica, and Danny, MVP, and everybody who is in place to handle those things are doing a great job of, you know, keeping me informed when I need to be and communicating back and forth to get this thing situated and going. So I don't have any answers as far as the date and time and whatnot, but I'm looking forward to that matchup. I really am.
I want to ask as well, what do you think of Savannah as a fighter, Shadeja? Because I think she let herself down against Shields. I think she's better than that, but she was awful against Shields, in my honest opinion.
I thought she fought a good fight. Savannah has a different type of style than your average fighter. She's tall. She's skillful. She has power. And like I said, styles make fights. And Clarissa is more of a, you know, punches and bunches and aggressive. So I think Savannah's a great fighter as well, you know. And she's doing an amazing job at getting in there, handling business. She took one loss. You know, great champions can take a loss and bounce back, right? Now she's a champion, so this could be an extremely confidence booster for her. So I'm probably going to be in here against a dangerous Savannah Marshall, but I'm up for the task.
I believe you. I think she did well to bounce back against Franchon Cruz. That was a good win for her for sure. But yeah, just before we wrap things up, Shadeja, I've kind of flown through everything I had for you. I just wanted to throw it over to you. If you've got any closing words just before we wrap it up, if you want to sign out with a little message to the listeners, and of course, do not forget to drop your social media handles as well.
Yes. I just wanted to say thank you for, you know, allowing me to tell my story on your podcast. I enjoyed this conversation. And to all the fans out there listening, just keep supporting me. It means a difference. It makes a difference, and I appreciate it. I love to fight. Okay, even if I'm nervous or scared, it's or anything, I love to fight. And follow me on Instagram, Shadeja_Green, on Facebook, Shadeja Green, on Twitter, Shadeja Green. I'm really active on Twitter sometimes, especially if someone mentions me. I interact with all the fans. So I know that I see the small little comments, and nothing is too small. You guys are all people and play a part of, you know, making boxing great. Because if it wasn't for the fans tuning in and having opinions and making comments, we would be fighting for nobody.
There you go. What a fantastic message to close things out. Just to the listeners there, like I say, I reiterate, follow Shadeja on social media. It's Shadeja Green on every platform, it seems. And yeah, man, it's fantastic to have you on. Obviously, New Jersey being so close to Philadelphia, I think, gets overshadowed sometimes by that you know, that historic Philly fight city. But yeah, from Ruben Hurricane Carter right up to Shadeja Green, this is the lay to follow. It's been a real pleasure speaking with you this week, Shadeja. Thank you for your time, and we'll speak again soon,
sir.
I'm sure.
Thank you. Appreciate you. Have a great day.
Okay, now it's time for part two on this week's show. This part, usually the news part of the show, but we've got nothing for you this week. So we're going to move straight to the preview part. We're going to start here tomorrow, Friday, August 25th at the Overtime Elite Arena. Just one prospect to mention, Lorenzo Truck Simpson, 13-0 in an 8-rounder against Vladimir Hernandez, who's 13-5. Obviously, Lorenzo is, if I'm not mistaken, from Baltimore. And I believe a good friend of Gervonta Davis. It's interesting because Gervonta is Tank and Lorenzo is Truck, which is why I always remember both guys' nicknames. But like I say, from Baltimore, gets in with Vladimir Hernandez, who has been match very tough, really. You know, his record doesn't look great, does it, on paper, 13-5. But when you read the guys he's lost to, you know, Israel Madrimov, Salomon Sissoko, Jesus Ramos, and a couple of other guys. So they're really, really, you know, good fighters there. And he's been stopped in two of his five losses, both times in round six. So again, I would expect this fight here to potentially go the whole eight, but certainly I don't see an early stoppage for Lorenzo Simpson. Yeah, that's that. Moving now to the big one, I guess. It goes down at the Stadion Wrocław in Wrocław, Poland. It's going to be live on ESPN+. It's going to be live on TNT Sports pay-per-view here in the UK. Let's start with the undercard. We've got Adem Hamed, Eddie, who is the son of Prince Nassim Hamed. It's his pro debut. He's in a four-rounder here. No opponent just yet for him. I've got no idea how good he is. I don't know if he boxes as an amateur at all. I'm guessing he probably did, but going to be good to see him out regardless. We're also going to see Daniel Lapine, who I think is signed to like U6 promotional team or whatever, because he seems to end up on a lot of these U6 undercards, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, he's a 6'6" southpaw light heavyweight, 7-0 with one KO. Like I say, doesn't often get the KO, but he gets in with a guy here by the name of Arrow Schwartz, who's 20-6 with a draw, only been stopped the one time. It was two fights ago to a guy called Powell August. But I've looked through the guy's resume. I don't really see anything too great on there. He did lose over 10 rounds on points to Eric Bazinyan, though, so he's not a bad fighter, to be honest with you. So again, you'd probably expect that one to be a points victory for Daniel Lapine. Also on the card, we are going to see Dmytro Mitrofanov. I know I've said that name a couple of times before. He's 13-0 with a draw. It's over 12 rounds. He gets in with the UK's Hamza Shiraz, who of course these days is trained by Ricky Funes out there in Van Nuys, California. It's just going to be good, really, to see Hamza Shiraz back out again. He's kind of bashed up a lot of guys domestically, like your River Wilson Bents, your Jez Smiths, your Bradley Skeets, you know, amongst a couple of other guys. But it's good to see him in a bit of a step up here. He gets in with the first fighter in his whole career that is also undefeated. So, yeah, and Mitrofanov is the home fighter, so all the best there to Hamza on the road. It's a bit of a random one, but yeah, he is one of Frank Warren's top prospects, or top fighters, really, I guess, at the moment in his stable. So yeah, he is the big favourite, despite being the away fighter. Also on the card as well, Denis Berenchik, not to be confused with Ivan Baranchik. This guy, Berenchik's the guy that's come into the ring on the maddest ring walks ever, like breaking through glass, coming out in I think handcuffed at one point. Maybe he might have came out as the Incredible Hulk another time. He gets in with Anthony Yigit, who's 27-3 with a draw. I think this would be quite interesting, to be honest with you, because Berenchik, I don't think is as good as his ring walks. And, you know, I was at his last fight when he beat Yvonne Mendy on the Fury Chisora 3 undercard. Quite a boring fight, but, you know, he's beaten some decent fighters. I think one of his victories a few fights ago against Viril Simeon, where he took him into round 7, that wasn't too great, because Viril Simeon usually gets knocked out in about one or two rounds. But yeah, I think it's going to be interesting, because it all depends on what Yigit has left. And even though he's been stopped in all three of his three losses, Ivan Baranchik actually boxed him before. How mad is that? That is going to be confusing. He got took out in round 7 against Baranchik, round 7 against Rolando Romero, and round 9 against Keyshawn Davis. So basically, he always goes into the second half of the fight. Again, I can't see Baranchik getting him out early. I think it could be Baranchik on points, which you can more than double your money on. I think that's a decent little bet there. I think Yigit will be, you know, quite fit. He's coming off a win last time out as well. Got a quick win after losing to Keyshawn Davis. And he showed in that fight there that, you know, he's very, very game still. That was only a couple of months ago, whereas Baranchik hasn't been in the ring since last year. So yeah, all the best there to the underdog Yigit, but I think he'll probably lose that one on points. And yeah, the main event, forget all the talking about the undercard. Alexander Usyk, 20-0. It's for the IBF, IBO, WBA, Super, and WBO World Heavyweight titles. He defends them against Daniel Dubois already, 19-1. Again, I was at his last fight when he was down in the first round against Kevin Lorena, but battled. Oh, he's down three times in the first round against Kevin Lorena, but battled back to get the stoppage in round 3. Very strange performance that night there. But what are you expecting, Eddie? I've got a feeling that you're going to say something, then I'm going to say something, then you're going to say something. This could go on for a while, but I'm going to start with you.
I don't know. Honestly, I think most people would think this is a little bit of a mismatch. In my opinion, I just don't really see Dubois being able to really do anything. I think he's as good of a puncher and as strong as he might be. He's a little too basic. And it's, I think for you, Sick, it's a little bit too easy to see. You know what I'm saying? What he's trying to do. I mean, he's not super duper slow or anything, but he's not overly fast. He's not a sharp type of boxer necessarily. I mean, he throws good shots from the outside. Big, you know, he has big power in his right hand, you know, good jab, but it's all pretty rudimentary and very easy to see. And I think for a fighter like Usyk, it's going to be, he's going to be able to pick him apart. He might not stop him early or do anything like that. But looking at what happened with Kevin Lorena, who knows, you know what I mean? If he gets caught right, who knows where it's going to go. But I just see Usyk being a little bit too much for him, having too many dimensions, too many things. He's just too capable in too many different ways for Dubois at this point. And I'm, you know, it's no hate or anything, and I'm not taking anything away from Dubois. And I'm not saying that, hey, lightning can't strike, because it can. But I just don't see it happening, and I see a Usyk victory, most likely mid to late round stoppage.
Interesting thoughts, Eddie. Yeah, I mean, like I said on last week's show, I think it was, or it might have been the show before that, Usyk has gone 8 years without a first half of the fight knockout, and that is the longest time that any fighter in the top 100 heavyweights in the world has gone without getting that early knockout. So for me, if there's an early knockout, it is going to be Dubois who gets it. That's my opinion, no question about it. I think Dubois will want to start fast. There's no way in the world I think it does him any good getting in there, letting Usyk get into a rhythm, and, you know, letting rounds slip away, because he knows that he's not going to win on the cards at all. He's not going to outbox Usyk. He needs to knock him out, and I think that is clear. Now, one thing that I would say, and I think you will probably agree, Eddie, is that Dubois doesn't have the IQ of an Anthony Joshua. And the reason I'm comparing the two is because they're both the same size. They're both big hitters, I guess. And they kind of have similar builds in many ways. So where Joshua has that IQ, and at times he wouldn't let his hands go because he wasn't set, and Usyk was doing things to bamboozle him and things like this, he didn't feel comfortable to let his shots go at times. I actually don't think Dubois will have those same issues, because I think Dubois is just going to let the shots go because he doesn't have the IQ of not knowing when to let a shot go and when to let a shot go. I actually think that it could work in his favor having a lower IQ, if that makes any sense. So, yeah, I think, obviously, Dubois has a big puncher's chance in this fight. And, obviously, Usyk's going to be the much smaller man, which I don't think bothers Usyk too much. I think Dubois will thrive off of that, though, being the bigger guy, the stronger guy, the harder puncher. We remember, obviously, Dubois, the sole defeat came to Joe Joyce, and that was because his eye was smashed in. It wasn't because he's got a weak chin. You know, he took some big shots off Joyce in that fight and went late in that fight, and Joyce at the time was banging everyone out quite early. I don't think his chin is questionable, and I don't think, I just can't see Usyk getting to him in that way, because Usyk is not going to want to stand in front of Dubois and trade with him at any point. I can only see Usyk being on the back foot, maybe walking Dubois into shots, maybe, you know, trying to pick him off, using his feints and stuff like that to maybe tire him out and drop that guard. I can see, like, Dubois again having like a bad cut or getting his eye smashed up or something like that. I can't see him getting stopped, you know, like a proper stoppage. Like, I can't see that happening. Dubois as well has a very good jab, just like Joshua has a good jab. I don't want him to abandon that jab and get a bit too right hand happy, but I think it's a winnable fight. But of course, that's not my pick. My pick would be, I think Usyk wins on points, or I wouldn't be surprised with a late stoppage from Usyk in rounds like 9 to 12. I think, yeah, Dubois might just keep walking into shots and getting picked off. Usyk to win on points is 3-1. I think that is a really, really, really good odds. And by the way, Dubois to win by knockout, 10-1. I don't care what anyone says. If you can hit like Dubois, you shouldn't be 10-1. I don't care how good Usyk is. Dubois bigger, stronger, you know, and he's got the punch. That's my thoughts on it, Eddie. I don't know if you want to take any of that apart.
No, I guess. Your thoughts are very similar to what I'm saying. And I do agree that if anybody's going out early, in most cases, it would be Dubois. But I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, Dubois would be the winner. But yeah, Usyk would be getting, yeah, you're right. But even with that, I mean, like, we saw the whole situation with Kevin Lorena. We're not saying, I'm not saying that that's going to happen again. You know what I mean? It's you know, that may have just been a weird situation. I mean, something could have happened in the fight. Who knows? You know what I mean? I don't even know if there was anything that was said after the fight that alluded to some kind of issues that he might have had in camp or just.
Eddie, let me just jump in. I hate to just jump in there. I just want to say, I didn't see anything after the fight as well, and that was I actually forgot this that fight took place. I saw obviously Dubois' record and thought, oh, hang on, I was actually at that fight. I wasn't sat in great seats, and I never heard the commentary. But it was weird. I didn't know if he'd like hurt his ankle or something from the first knockdown. Something didn't seem right, and I haven't actually heard it addressed at all. And when I remembered that, that was like a little bit of a worry. I was thinking, if Lorena can do that, obviously Usyk can do that. But having said that, I do think Lorena took risks that Usyk won't take, especially early on.
Yeah, and that's true. But it's just, I think with Dubois and me as a fighter, I'm just thinking like for example, I'll give you something with Tomas Adamek, right? Even though I think he has probably more dimensions than what Dubois has, you know what I mean? I think he did a few more things than Dubois. I still think Tomas was extremely easy to pick apart from a boxing perspective. He always fired off the jab, twos and threes. It was always on the same cadence. It wasn't anything different. He never started really with a right hand. It wasn't so much that he threw single shots, but everything he threw that was in combination was off the chain. See, after a while of doing this, and when you've been in the sport extremely long, you're able to pick apart little details of fighters that seem really good and really talented and all of this and that, but their skill level is high, but it's still extremely basic. That's what I see with Daniel Dubois. I think Dubois has a good level of skill. He's a good boxer, you know, in reference to he throws his punches correctly. He's a big puncher. He's strong. You know, he is durable, you know, contrary to even what I'm saying about the whole Lorena thing. He's tough, but he's right there. And each punch he throws is something you can see. He's not like a Vladimir or a Tyson Fury or a Usyk or even an Anthony Joshua in situations. He's a little more vanilla in a lot of what he does. So where you can see what a guy's offensive capabilities are from, like I said, a boxing standpoint, and someone who can you know, looks, especially a good guy, a good fighter defensively like Usyk is, and he's good at picking things apart, I don't think it's going to be as complicated as it may seem. Now, if I'm Dubois, and I'm pretty sure, you know, like I say, they got Bash, like, I don't know if I said it, said it earlier or not, I can't remember if I did, but Bashir, who used to work with Usyk, is helping, I think, Dubois, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe he can give a little insight, but if I was in the corner of Dubois, one thing I would be thinking is just like the same thing I said with Anthony Joshua. Do not make it a boxing match, because that's not your shit. If you're going to do something in this fight, you have to make it ugly. You have to put your foot on the gas, and don't fight this fight like it's a 12-round fight. You got to fight it like it's a 6 to 8-round fight at maximum, because you have to pull as much as you can out of this guy and have him put himself in danger of getting caught with one of your big shots. Because I think that's where his win is. It lies within those first rounds, those first, you know, 6 to 8 rounds. I think anything beyond that is just out of the realm of possibilities for him. I just don't think it's going to happen. Now, you know, I'm not saying he's a bad fighter. I don't think his boxing ability is in the same league when we're talking about straight up and down, no special effects. He's not doing anything, you know, unbelievable. He doesn't, you know what I mean? I think it's extremely basic. And Usyk coming from a cruiserweight, which the pace is faster, the guys are typically faster, I don't think he's going to struggle seeing the shots come. Now, I could be wrong, but this is just my assessment of it. And this is why I say that Usyk will get a mid to late round stoppage, because it's just going to be eventually he's gonna be taking a lot of punishment. Now, if he catches him, he catches him. That happens. But I just don't see it coming. I just don't see it happening. I see Usyk being able to see what he's throwing, you know, and understand what it is. And I see a mid to late round stoppage. I don't think it's gonna be too difficult.
Well, we shall wait and see. To be honest with you, Eddie, nothing that you've said, I don't really feel like I need to respond in any way. I kind of agree with what you're saying. I get what you're saying. It's boxing's funny, man. It's a smart man's sport, but then at times it's a bigger and stronger man's sport. And it's weird how a guy with such a high ring IQ like Usyk has, like, he's the much smarter boxer, but Dubois having that lack of boxing IQ can make him even more dangerous, I think. And that is why boxing.
I forgot to even mention that, but that is a hell of a point you made, and that is a real fact, a real serious fact. I like that, what you said, because that makes a lot of sense. But I think even in this case, with him having a low IQ, even though it could be a positive thing, I think if he had a low IQ and fought with a style similar to Deontay Wilder and wasn't good basically with boxing, you know what I mean? Like, knew how to throw the straight shots and the right hands and the left hooks and everything the way they're supposed to be thrown, but just doesn't have the great IQ. And I think, so contrary to what most people would think, I think Deontay Wilder has a decent IQ. I don't think his IQ is terrible. I just think he doesn't know how to do certain things in the ring. I think with his experience now and what he has, I think his IQ is actually one of his stronger points rather than just, you know, one of his weakest points. I think it's his awkward style along with that and understanding what he has and playing to what he has, I think is why I say his IQ is not so bad. Deontay Wilder knows he's not the most skilled fighter in the world. Deontay Wilder understands that he has the right hand of Jesus, basically, and every time he lands it, people go to sleep, and he plays to that. But I think with Dubois, even though he has extreme, he's strong, he's tough, his lack of IQ with his basic boxing skills, I think is what's going to put him in trouble with Usyk. And although I do agree with what you're saying, Joe, and that does make a hell of a, you make a hell of a point with that, I just think that he needs to have a more awkward style for that to be effective. And I just don't think it's awkward enough. I think his basic boxing IQ and his basic boxing skills was going to put him, you know, behind the eight ball here. And I think it's just going to be too easy for you to see him pick apart.
Well, there we go. We'll wait and see. Not long to wait now. It's definitely a fight I'm really excited for. And then moving now to the final card to mention. It goes down at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tulsa, Oklahoma, USA. It's going to be live on ESPN. It's going to be live on Sky Sports as well. I cannot wait to tune into this one as well. Let's start with the undercard. We're going to see Nico Ali-Walsh, 8-0 with a draw. Of course, drawing in his very last fight to Danny Rosenberger. He gets in with a guy called Sona Akau, who is 7-1. He's actually all seven of his wins. He's got 4 KOs. All 7 of his wins have come to guys without winning records. And the one loss was actually his last fight. He lost to Cameron Crail, who was 19-27 with 3 draws. He actually got TKO'd in 6 rounds. That was just 2 months ago. He gets in here with Nico Ali-Walsh, who you'd say would win this fight quite easily, I'd say. Also on the card, we're going to see Bakodir Jalilov, the Olympic gold medalist. He's 12-0 with 12 KOs. He gets in with a fighter who I'd never heard of called Onoriodi Ewarime, who I've probably pronounced his name wrong. But anyway, 6'7" from Nigeria. His record is 20-2 with 19 KOs. He's got 2 stoppage losses. A first round loss to Rodney Hernandez and a fourth round loss to Zan Kosobutsky. I don't know where they found this guy from, but obviously he can punch, but you know, you'd expect Jalilov to just knock him out at some point. Also on the card as well, Bruce Carrington, 8-0, gets in with Angel Contreras, who's 13-6 with two draws. That's over eight rounds there. Also on the card as well, big shout out to this guy here, Abdullah Mason. He's 9-0 with eight KOs. I think he's only 19 years of age. He is out again. He boxed just last month. This will be his fourth fight of 2023. He gets in with Cesar Villaraga, who is 10-7 with a draw, but only been stopped one time in those seven losses, and that was back in 2015, so 8 years ago now. But Abdullah Mason would like to, of course, get that stoppage. It's over six rounds there. All the best to him. He's certainly one to watch. What else do we have on this undercard? Let me see. Jeremiah Milton, 10-0, gets in with Craig Lewis, who's 15-6 with a draw. That's over eight rounds at heavyweight. And yeah, the two big fights on this card. Let's start with the undercard one, the co-main. Effie Ajagba, 17-1, coming off that win last time out against Stefan Shaw, took his O, but went 10 rounds with him, even though in the very next fight after that, Stefan Shaw gets stopped in six rounds by Joseph Goodall from Australia. So that wasn't too good. That didn't look very good, the fact that Ajagba went 10 with him and at points in the fight was losing rounds. But anyway, Effie Ajagba gets in with Zan Kosobutsky, 19-0 with 18 KOs. The Kazakh, who was originally scheduled to be boxing Jared Big Baby Anderson, Eddie, and then couldn't get to America due to visa issues. That was the night that Charles Martin stepped in place of Zan Kosobutsky and caused Jared Anderson a lot of problems. But yeah, I don't know why we didn't see the fight rescheduled, but instead Zan Kosobutsky gets in with Effie Ajagba. Zan Kosobutsky, like I say, huge puncher. The only person to have actually took him the distance is that guy Kostantin Dovbychenko, the guy that come over to the UK last month and upset Matty Harris, knocked him out, and also had come over and took Moses Itauma the distance as well for the first time that he'd ever gone the distance. So yeah, this will be a really good fight. And Zan Kosobutsky, if you haven't seen him, Eddie, he's a slick southpaw, only 6'3", but can punch like hell, and they're expecting him to actually knock Ajagba out. Ajagba is the underdog. I think that's just a great fight, and I'm seriously looking forward to that one. That one's better than the main event, by the way. And the main event, Jared Big Baby Anderson, 15-0, coming off that win, Eddie, that we saw against Prince Charles Martin. He gets in with Andrei Rudenko, who's 35-6, been around for a long, long time. Rudenko made his pro debut back in 2006. Only been stopped the one time, like I say, it was two fights back to a guy called Vladislav Sirenko, who was 18-0 at the time. He's now 19-0, and he was able to stop him in round six. Since then, that was back in December 2021. Since then, Rudenko's had one fight back. He was able to knock out in two rounds a guy who was 2-10. That was back in January of this year. So he was out the ring for 13 months. Just come back with a two-round knockout job against a guy who was 2-10. And then here we are 7 months later. He gets in with Jared Big Baby Anderson. It's just a case of if Anderson will knock him out or not. You'd have to say he probably will knock him out, even though he didn't look good last time out and went the distance with Charles Martin and was hurt several times throughout that fight there. Yeah, I want to see what the over-under is set at on this fight here, because I think that could be quite interesting. Rudenko, for all his faults, is quite tough. Jared Anderson to win on points is over 3-1, but the over-under is set at 4.5 rounds, and I think that might be interesting. Maybe over might be worth a little punt there. But anyway, that brings the preview part to a close. In part one, we did the review part. It was very, very short. Then we welcomed our special guest, the undefeated super middleweight female world contender, Miss Shadeja Green, 13-0, 11 KOs, a big threat to Clarissa Shields down the line. We shall see. And then, yeah, in part two, there was no news, but we've just wrapped up the preview part. The final thing for me to do is to come in with the outro, which I'll do in just a few seconds. Okay, and this wraps up episode 410 of the Box Hard Podcast. I've been your host, Joey Coastman. Eddie Chambers has been with me for the duration of the show. A huge shout out to this week's special guest, the undefeated super middleweight female world contender, Mrs. Shadeja Green. The biggest thanks of all, though, goes out to you, the listeners. Thanks once again for tuning in. I just wanted to apologize because the recorders acted up a little bit this week, so a little bit of the audio quality would have been a little bit choppy. So if you've noticed that or experienced a bit of annoyance listening to it, I just wanted to apologise. I'm not entirely sure what happened there, but I'll aim to have it fixed by next week's podcast. So yeah, sorry about that once again. There has been one piece of news break whilst we've been recording the show. It's that Jai Opatai will be defending his IBF and Ring Magazine Cruiserweight World titles against Jordan Thompson of the UK. That one to go down on September 30th at the Wembley Arena. That's going to be on, that's the main event there. We've got an undercard announced for that as well. I wasn't quite ready for that. Few female fighters on the card. We're going to see Ellie Scottney defending her world title. She gets in with Laura Griffa. We're going to also see, I think, Shannon Ryan on the card. We're going to see Rhiannon Dixon on the card for the EBU European title. We're going to see Chev Clark on the bill as well. Maisie Rose Courtney, a few others. So, yeah, that one, like I say, will be live on DAZN September the 30th. But, yeah, that's about everything from myself. Enjoy your weekends, people. Stay safe, and we shall see you all again next week.